For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. If you go to MobiusStripPress.com, you can find out how you can download these podcasts and find our support documents and links. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. For more information, getting the podcast, supporting documents, as well as all the links that you will need to understand for Reclaiming the Republic and Republic Review, which is the thesis of my books, all you've got to do is to go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 844-320-4299. Again, that's 844-320-4299. This is an educational and grassroots program, and so I'm going to repeat this every time you tune in. That is because this is designed to restoring our republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to, and I sometimes refer to them as the federal government. Madison referred to them as the general government. But the intent is to get them back into the framework and scope of the Constitution, which they're well outside those boundaries now. Many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. Consequently, you will need to listen to all of these shows to garner what Republic Review is and how we can reclaim the Republic by initiating a convention for Republic Review. Don't forget, you can also download all the podcasts, as I just said, at MobiusStripPress.com, as well as ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, not .com.org. We do have a special phone line, though, and that special phone line is for the national conservative entertainers who are not focused on the Constitution and or myopic as I am. I'm very single-focused. This show is about the Constitution and how we can reclaim it. That number for them is 844-320-4299. Let me also say this, because I do get this, and I understand that in some respects, some of my words, my vocabulary, and so forth may be talking over your head. It is not my intent to feel better, and as a matter of fact, if there's something you don't understand, I've always learned that the dumb question is the one that's not asked, and so please call in if you don't understand, and I will work my way through it in a much more simple or a easier terms to use. I tend to, in reading the Federalist Papers and so forth, I tend to just lean on the same words that they've used, such as enumerated, which is basically a fancy name for listing, a listing of powers, enumerated powers, so forth. Anyway, so it's not my intent to talk over your head. As a matter of fact, I'm failing in communication if that's the case or if you feel that way. The intent is really to be educational and try to bring you to the same level. I think I mentioned last week, and I say this in every presentation I give, I believe 80% of this nation is reasonable. I see what you see in the streets is probably that 20% or maybe less than that, that are just the outliers that are so unreasonable that they commit, you know, crimes against property of people and so forth, and they just completely lose it because they're possessed and in a state of unreasonableness. I believe everybody's reasonable, and based on that, or 80%, again, are reasonable. Based on that premise, I believe reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. The problem is that middle part, that seldom or the seldom disagree is good if you're equally informed. But why are we not equally informed? Well, not too many people spend their time reading the Federalist Papers, reading the ratification debates and going through this. And it just seems to me that since I've been one that has done that and has written a few books about that, I think it's really important to try to bring you to a similar level of understanding or information. That way, as reasonable people, we would probably find ourselves agreeing. So anyway, I hope that you don't feel like I'm talking over your head, but the intent is to get you informed to that level. I've had somebody actually make a metaphor that listening to my show, because they only listen to one of the shows, and he was saying, well, you referred to this and you referred to that. And he likened it to walking a dog without a leash. He says, you spend most of your time trying to get the dog back. And the intent is I'm going to go through a lot of information through the course of this show. We're going to go through the Federalist Papers. I'm actually going to read. So while you're driving or whatever it is you're doing, I'm going to read to you what Madison actually said, what Hamilton actually said. And though I'm not the best reader, or maybe I'm not the best orator, I think it's important. And so I think it's worth the little bit of struggle that may occur in reading those words, because some of those words are not the easiest to read. But it is paramount that I say them, because I don't want to paraphrase and get you to think, oh, he's just making this up. Nor do I want you to believe in what I say alone. I want you to understand exactly what they said. And then if we disagree on what was said, then we've got a good debate. And by all means, again, that number to call would be 844-320-4299. So up front, because I know that I offend people, let me apologize. If I seem like I'm walking that dog without a leash, or you feel like I'm talking over your head, that is not the intent. I consider listening to the show like drinking from a fire hose. And that's a metaphor I've heard before, and I've used it quite often. As I've said, I'm going to be reading a lot of content, and this is not just a casual conversation with information that you've been briefed or have heard about in the news and so forth. We're going to be digging up these founding documents and going through it. And as such, there's a lot of information there, and I may, you know, breeze over some of it. And so I liken it to drinking from a water hose. And bottom line, you're going to get your thirst quenched, but you're also going to get drenched, and some of that may not soak in. So I will apologize if it doesn't soak in, but it is worth getting wet for, because it is our liberties and our sovereignty at stake. And not to say that you don't understand what sovereignty is, but I will go take that extra step and let you know that the reason sovereignty is important is because it gives you the ultimate say. The sovereign is the person with the last say. And what our framers did was they created a republic where we had a multi-tiered sovereignty. The federal government was very limited in the sovereignty or the ultimate say that they had, and only those few things listed in the Constitution is what they're sovereign over. The states, we've empowered with lots of sovereignty, and we the people basically have surrendered that, but we have retained that for ourselves because we have the power to literally get rid of those people in the states. Unfortunately, the intestinal fortitude and the will of the people in some states is just not what it should be, because they just haven't learned, they haven't been punished enough by the secular progressives that are in office for, you know, constraining traffic, for constraining productivity, for taxation, and for just literally becoming a burden to the public. Unfortunately, there are too many states, and the West Coast seems to be, you know, just as equally populated as the East Coast, with states that have this paradigm that we're getting better, just give us more money. And I it makes me think about the time when I read Adam Smith's book, The Wealth of Nations. And in reading that book, Adam Smith talks about the necessity of government, but he also says that government should never become such a burden to the people that it drives them to gaming the government. And I'm really paraphrasing here, but because he doesn't use these words. But what he was saying is that when an individual feels so burdened by government that they start cheating on their taxes, they start bypassing, buying things across the internet to avoid state taxes. They go to black markets or garage sales and buy their things so that they're not being taxed. So they do what they can to avoid taxes. When government has gotten to that threshold, then they've overcome their position and purpose in life. Now, I hear some music, so let me take a quick break and I will get right back into the welcoming to this great club of ours. You will find consistent advice among financial advisors, conservative entertainers, preppers, and those who have legitimate concern about our currency and our government. They all recommend holding precious metals in some way and degree for varying reasons. I, too, recommend precious metals, especially holding it in your possession in a secure storage system for several reasons. One, it can protect you from the inflation of a fiat currency. Two, some coins can be used in bartering in an absolute emergency. And three, this is a good way to pass wealth down to your posterity. If you're looking to add precious metals to your portfolio or to your holdings, I would like to show you how you can get these metals for less than how I can get them. You heard that correct, for less than how I can get them. And I believe you cannot beat this price. Let me explain. My broker's company has, I believe, the lowest set price for all metals on the market. And just like all other precious metal companies, they offer commission to those who refer others, which most times this affects the bottom line price. Well, my broker's company does not adjust the price. They have a flat buy and selling price. And I have worked it out with my broker to take a portion of my commission to offer you a discount to let you save money on your purchases for slightly lower than the price, than the selling price that I get them for. It may be a slight discount, but a discount nonetheless. If you're interested in buying physical metals at the lowest price and learning more about this deal, contact me via email at metals, with an S at the end, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. And I will introduce you to my broker and he can give you the pricing and how you will actually pay less than me. Again, that's metals, M-E-T-A-L-S, at reclaimingtherepublic.org. Well, as I was mentioning before the break, I was going to welcome you to this new club. Welcome, and this is a very warm welcome to the 100,000th club. And I say that because those that are listening to the show, there is just so few that have an understanding of the Constitution, that have what I would call constitutional literacy. There is just so few that are literate in the Constitution that this show will make you a powerhouse. And as a matter of fact, I truly believe the adage, knowledge is power. If I educate the listeners, then you can educate your elected leaders, your local leaders, and you can educate other people. And in doing so, in creating what I would call constitutional warriors, and holding people accountable, because 9 times out of 10, whenever you look at a bill, whenever you look at something and you scratch your head and go, well, that's kind of an interesting bill, and I'm actually going to discuss one of them coming up here, you'll be able to go, well, how does that balance against the Constitution? And so if I can get you myopic like myself in thinking, how is this in association or relationship to the Constitution? Anyway, moving on, as we've seen Trump's nominees slowly get vetted, or I should say slowly get danced through the political circus in the Senate, One of the things I think Trump needs to do, and he needs to make sure that all of his cabinet members root out the deep-seated progressives in the bureaucracy. These deep-seated progressives in the government bureaucracy have existed since Bush Sr. He had planted all sorts of progressives embedded into these agencies, from the EPA, energy, and so forth. I think another thing, because Trump is listening right now, I'm making this big presumption, one of the most important things he should also focus on these next 4 years is to rule out and make sure that we eliminate voter fraud. This has to be shut down. We cannot allow our system to be corrupted anymore by the secular progressives. Project Veritas exposed a huge ring back on the East Coast of where they were busing people into multiple states on election day and voting in multiple states. And it just so happens, I wrote an article on Facebook about voter fraud and how important it is that we shut this down, because the battleground states, they're battleground states because they're that close in numbers, that if they can throw enough ballots into the box or throw people at voting fraud in the ballot boxes, then they can actually turn the election and steal some of these battleground states, such as Ohio and so forth. So it is paramount, one, if he wants to ensure that he's going to be reelected, because I'm telling you, the secular progressives are going to come hard. If you can't tell, every position that they've been taking means that it is 4 years of ideological warfare in the political spaces in D.C. I've also said long before the election and when he was elected and up until his inauguration and even today, I still have my reservations on Trump. I know, and I've said this, that he is constitutionally illiterate. He doesn't know where the Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government, or if it does. He would probably tell you that we're a democracy, but I think that that's a good thing, because he doesn't have this bias on what the Constitution is and what it isn't. There's a good chance that he actually may say, you know what, let me learn about the Constitution from the framers instead of from all these judges and desk jockeys and so forth, and let's determine what I can do and what I can't do, or what the federal government can do and what the federal government can't do. There is merit and a great possibility that Trump could actually become our greatest president in the last century, or even since the framers, because he's coming in with this determination to make America great. Maybe that's just a lingo, but it seems like everything he's doing, he is trying to do good. And if we can only explain to him that over 80% of the federal government or the general government is unconstitutional, and get his ear and prove to him, because I can easily do that, and that's what this show is about for you. I will prove to you that the framers did not empower the general government to do 80% of the stuff that it's doing, and that the only way, and these aren't my words, these are Madison's words, the only way the general government can take on any new role, responsibility, or power is through the amendment process that one will find in Article 5 of the Constitution. Therefore, and I submit that the empirical data is there regarding all of these unconstitutional RRPs, or roles, responsibilities, and powers. And so over the course of the next couple of months, for those who are listening and actually downloading the podcast and going back and forth through what I'm saying and actually reading these Federalist Papers, reading these ratification debates, and torturing yourself, death by paper cut type of thing, I truly believe you will have the same conviction and epiphany that I have had. And that's what drove me to writing this book, my first book, We the People, Whose Constitution Is It Anyway? A Constitutional Fix to a Constitutional Problem. And in that conclusion, it will basically be this, that the states have the power, and they're the only ones with the constitutional power to correct the federal government. It's not the courts. It's not the president. It's not Congress. It's you and me in the states demanding that the states protect us from federal tyranny. That's the bottom line. when one looks at the refugee issue that's kind of flaming the radios and TVs right now, bottom line, the refugees themselves are unconstitutional. Show me in the Constitution or in the ratification debates that the general government was given a grant power to identify a block of citizens, a block of ethnicity, culture, what have you, a block of people to just skirt the immigration system and bring them in. I will support my argument in this way, that in Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution clearly spells out how we are to elect the president. It's a very simple process, but it spells it out. In 1800, when Adams and Jefferson went through a very heated process, and I think it was like 38 votes, I believe, before they actually settled Thomas Jefferson being the next president, they actually afterwards said, you know what, we don't want to go through this again. And what they didn't do was they didn't create a regulation or a statute. What they did was they amended the Constitution and identified a new process of what to do and how to do that. Go look at the 12th Amendment. That is the process of if we're going to change what and how to do something. Now, we no longer follow the 12th Amendment because the federal government realized, well, it may be kind of hard to do that, and why do that when we can get away with, and we've been getting away with, creating regulations and statutes. And so we're no longer following the Constitution in the electoral process because states are not allowed to just give their electoral college to the party that wins. Because what that does is it takes away the voice of the congressional districts that voted otherwise. And so, and I'll get into that down the road because that violates Article 4, Section 4, that each state must be Republican in form, or the Constitution at least guarantees that. But anyway, so back on the refugee angle of this, the Constitution did not grant the federal government to just basically say, okay, we're going to allow this huge block of people to come in, whether that be Vietnam, whether that be Laos, whether that be the Philippines, whether that be Cuba. It does not matter. What really matters is that if they want to be able to identify blocks of people, then what they need to do is amend the Constitution and let the states determine whether we want blocks of people to be able to migrate or immigrate into this nation. Because as far as I see it, and I think most people see it today, as more dangerous than anything else. Well, we've already come up to our second break because I can hear that music and I love that music, but let me take a short break and we'll be right back after these commercial announcements. Okay, so I was finishing my rant off about the refugees regarding the still current things that are going on, because I do want to have some current issues and how to look at them regarding a constitutional perspective. But one of the things that kind of kills me, because we've always had, and I've said this before, that we have this split or civil war of ideologies between the communists or the subjugators or the Democrats who want statism and giving the state sovereignty on all things. And then there's the conservatives that are kind of a mix mash where, you know, some of them think that nationalism is good to some degree, limited nationalism, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, over the course of several years, I think it started back in the 90s that the Republicans were identified as the party of no. Well, now that there's been such an unleashing of statism coming from the communists or the Democrats for such a long time that it's, and now that the power has shifted in DC, one can see that the Democrats just seem to be the ones of the party of no now. And as a matter of fact, they are taking it to such extremes that I've never really seen before, that I'm asking everybody to take heed and notice of what these communists are doing, what they're doing out in the streets, what they're doing in Congress, and the things that they're trying to get away with. And it's very important that for future reference, we always take the high ground. But I think it's also important in taking that high ground that we point out that we're not doing those things that they've done. And furthermore, the most important part of this is that we no longer compromise. We can no longer compromise any types of legislation for our liberties. In other words, we're no longer going to surrender our liberties in giving the state or identifying a new power given to the state, such as being able to detain U.S. citizens for an indefinite amount of time. It's basically suspending habeas corpus, the writ of habeas corpus regarding the, I think it was the 2012, or yeah, I think it was the 2012 defense spending bill, where they were able to, for terrorist purposes, if they said, well, we think you're a terrorist, they could detain you. So all of these things are a big concern. But one of the real hot things that I kind of wanted to get people to think about, there's a Colorado congressman, and he's a Republican, and his name is Dave Williams. And he's introducing a bill in Colorado that will allow victims to sue politicians who have established sanctuary areas, whether that's a city, county, state, or what have you. Therefore, if you happen to be harmed by an illegal in that city, county, state, and this bill goes through, you will be able to sue those politicians for monetary damages. If it's a life, you know, property, what happens, you'll now be able to sue them in court. And I find that interesting that we want to take that angle to all, you know, to take our already bogged down court system and make it more bogged down, especially in these states, cities, and what have you that already have illegal sanctuary city status. And given the one I'm broadcasting out of right now, where Spokane is a sanctuary city, or they want to be. Well, if that goes through, then, and if we went through here in Washington, well, then we could pursue in court monetary damages. But why? Why would somebody introduce a bill like this when already it's unconstitutional to establish a sanctuary city? The federal government is the sovereign. Remember, I used the word sovereign. They are sovereign over what is our immigration standards and policies. If we don't like them, then there is a process, and it's called the Article 5 process. It's called voting out your representatives from the House and from the Senate and getting them into doing it as long as it's within the realms of the scope and power that they have vested in them in those enumerated powers. Then that's the process in getting the change. It's not thumbing your nose at the Constitution and the general government and say, we're not going to abide by this. We're creating a sanctuary city. What they're doing is undermining the Constitution and affecting the stability and security of the Union and the Republic. Anybody, any state attorney general can identify these politicians as treasonous because they're taking actions against the Constitution. And by doing so, they can try them. Go read the Constitution. The states have the power to charge, indict, try, and convict people for treason. And as far as I'm concerned, as I was kind of mentioning earlier to somebody else, you know, the punishment for treason is, you know, you can hang somebody. And maybe what we should do is hang a few people, and then people will start waking up and going, well, maybe we shouldn't do that. Bottom line, introducing bills like this is obfuscates, or it completely distorts what the real problem is. The real problem is that these politicians are not complying to the Constitution. And near as I can tell, every single one of these guys puts their arm to the square. They state an oath that they say they will support and defend the Constitution. They're violating their oath of office right out the gate. So Anyway, let me move on to these unconstitutional departments and what these unconstitutional departments are. Justice Department, Interior Department, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor, Health and Human Services, Housing and Urban Development, I mean, Transportation, Energy, Education, Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security. So these unconstitutional departments are a violation of the Constitution, and maybe Trump might get the message and might understand if he reads some of Madison's writings, if he reads some of Jefferson's and Hamilton's and Washington's and the rest of the framers and go, you know what? The only way we can exercise these roles, responsibilities, or powers by these departments is through an amendment process. That's pretty easy for somebody to just say, but I would ask anybody, and I'm going to actually read this, and I'm going to say this several times before I read it, but if you go to Madison's veto of the bonus bill or the infrastructure bill, it was March 3rd, 1817. I know you're driving, so you're writing this down. That's why you want to download these podcasts. But if you read that veto, he admonishes Congress in telling them that they can't just usurp this power, that they have to go and apply to the states and amending the Constitution. As a matter of fact, he clearly states that he wants to be able to do this, but he points out that you can't use the Commerce Clause, you can't use the Necessary and Proper Clause, the General Welfare Clause, or the Supremacy Clause, because those clauses only work for those enumerated powers. In other words, the Necessary and Proper Clause can only be applied when it is an enumerated power in the Constitution. And it's the same thing with the Supremacy Clause. It's the same thing with the General Welfare Clause. So the only process for these departments to constitutionally exist, it can't be coming from the court because the framers didn't allow the court to amend the Constitution, or they would have stated that in Article 5. The only process is through the Article 5 process, where Congress, by two-thirds, passes an amendment for being forwarded out to, and it has to be two-thirds of both houses, then it gets forwarded out to the states for ratification. And once the states, three-fourths of the states, agree that this is a good thing for them to do, then they can do it. Until then, all of those departments I've listed are unconstitutional because there's never been an amendment process that has granted them. So if you understand what the Constitution is, it isn't case law. The Constitution is not this vehicle of precedents and rulings that the court can slowly twist it and meander it down this slope of progressivism so that next thing you know, they've legalized different forms of marriage, they've legalized abortions, and so forth. The bottom line is that the court was given no allowance for case law in the Constitution. Had the framers identified that the court would have this power, the states would have rejected it, and there's nowhere listing in there. As a matter of fact, what they say is that the courts are supposed to be the safeguards of the contract, that they're not to allow violations of the contract. Well, they quickly learned a way around that, and John Marshall was very good at creating unconstitutional footings, but bottom line, those powers were never granted to the states, or I should not say, not to the states, those powers were never granted to the judiciary, to the Supreme Court and the different federal court systems. So as we move forward in the constitutional process, and as I get through these ratification, or as the Federalist Papers, I'll get into these ratification debates, and I'll talk about the contract and the importance of the ratification debates coming up in the very last segment. So stay tuned, and I will give you the insights regarding this contract of our Constitution and why this is so important. Thank you. Okay, well, to explain real quick the difference between Mobius Strip Press and ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, the reason I have these two sites is the .org is the actual grassroots movement, educational movement, and so forth. The Mobius Strip Press is really my publishing company and publishing my books and working with other writers and so forth. Anyway, as I was ranting about this contract and why this is so important and why am I going into these details, who has a contract? I'll bet you everybody listening to this show right now has a contract in force, whether that contract is a mortgage, whether that contract is a labor agreement, whether that contract is for services such as your internet service, which I will rant someday in the near future over that. Because watch out, they're coming and they're going to start hammering people for more money because your internet service provider isn't getting enough money. But why are contracts important? Well, everybody that has a labor contract, if you're an employee and you're working for somebody, I'll bet you that in your contract, it doesn't state that your employer has to pay you in dollars. I'll bet that it has a salary amount that is a dollar figure, but if your employer wanted to, he could say, well, you know, we have an abundance of pine cones, and pine cones are a traded commodity, so what we're going to give you and pay you is a payment in pine cones based on the current commodity value, ergo, or tomatoes, whatever, you know, is available, and instead of them paying you in the full dollars and cents, they pay you in an equal form in the quantity of whatever commodity that is. Now, if that was gold, maybe pretty good if gold is on the down, but if gold is just shooting up and you're losing value every day in what they're giving you, then you may not be happy. But I'll guarantee you wouldn't be happy if they were paying you in pine cones. So what would you do? That's a void or violation as far as what you would concern or what you would consider a violation of your contract. And I don't know anybody that would consider their labor contract or their labor agreement one of those things that would be worth fighting for or quitting or making a significant adjustment in our lives. I will tell you that the Constitution is probably the most precious contract that we all share. It is the guarantee that we have inalienable rights, just like the Declaration of Independence guarantees, and it's built upon those. And the day that they decide to discard the Constitution is the day that your liberties and those rights have vanished. We don't have a lot of time in doing this. It doesn't matter who is in the White House. What matters is that they start complying to the contract. Everybody must. You wouldn't allow your employer to give you a disadvantage. You might allow them to give you an advantage. In other words, oh, well, we paid you too much money and there's nowhere in the contract that we can, you know, legally get that back from you. So shame on us. You'd probably not care too much about that. But if they shorted you and there was no way for you to get that money back, you'd probably be very upset. We can't be hypocrites about this. What we have to do is expect them to live by the contract and follow it. So if you understand that the Constitution is a contract, if you don't realize it is actually a contract, read Article 7. Article 7 are the parameters of how many states have to buy into the contract to make that contract of force for the things that it identifies and lists. That being said, this contract goes out to the 13 original states. These 13 original states that are forming this small general government that is defined in scope very specifically to do certain things, they discuss this. Now, in any contract law, and you can talk to any contract lawyer, if you document the definition of what this means, what does this mean here, this supremacy clause, that the Constitution is supreme in all things? Well, that only means that the Constitution and the powers that are delegated to the federal government or the general government, they're supreme in just those powers and those powers alone. It doesn't mean that they're supreme in all things that they want to whimsically think and make up. Well, it seems to be the first definition doesn't apply anymore, that they can whimsically make anything up and they can force that down our throats. But the beautiful thing is that when they defined this and they spoke about this in the ratification debates, and that's why I'm going to read these for you, and I'm going to prove to you that the empirical data is overwhelming, that the federal government is so hard clamped into the enumerated powers and only those, and that all these other things are violations of the Constitution, then you will start realizing, well, we actually have a contractual violation in several ways, and we can force compliance. And I'll get into all of that, because that gets into my books of Republic Review and how we can actually stand up and force the federal government back into the things that they're supposed to be doing. Anyway, in the ratification debates, these are actually the documents that were actually written. They actually wrote down who said what and what did they say. It was just like a court of law where they had a stenographer and they took notes and they took records. Inside these ratification debates, I said this earlier in this show, and I've probably said this last week, and I'll say this all the time, there were no allowance given or provided in the Constitution during these ratification debates that established case law as a part of the Constitution, or allowing case law and judge rulings and precedents to make modifications to what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional. The judicial powers were never granted in making any changes to the Constitution. Therefore, what should be happening is that when a judge says, you know what, we think that this should be constitutional, then it goes over to the legislation, and the legislative branch then writes an amendment and sends it out to the states and goes, based on the court feels this way, we would like you to ratify this amendment to the Constitution. And then those with the power that actually, you know, actually have the authority over the contract can then say, yeah, we think that this is a good thing that you're doing. And I know I'm talking in general sense, because I could easily point to abortion, all of these other things that they've just usurped into our lives and reached in to every facet of our life, from, you know, how many gallons our toilet will flush to the energy consumption of a bulb or how things are even manufactured anymore. Another thing that you won't find in the definitions in these ratification debates are statutes of limitations. Oh, well, you know, they've been getting away with this for so long that, you know, it's got to be constitutional now. Well, no, a violation of the contract is a violation regardless of how long they've been getting away with this. And if you find out that your neighbor has actually built, and now there are laws in real estate, and I forget what it's called, but there are laws that if they get away with, you know, taking a part of your land by putting a building there and you don't take action immediately, then they can actually force a redrawing of the boundaries of the land. But when it comes down to the Constitution, there's no laws or amendments to the Constitution that says, hey, if we get away with something, we bamboozle the states for, you know, 100 years, then that becomes constitutional and we don't have to write it down or anything. I won't find that amendment. You won't find that amendment. It was never granted. The statute of limitations is no force within the constitutional boundaries and the limitations that are placed on the federal government. The other thing is the mystical clauses, those four clauses I mentioned, the general welfare, commerce, necessary and proper, and the supremacy clause. These mystical clauses were clearly identified by Madison and many of the framers that were a part of the Constitutional Convention. These clauses only apply to the enumerated or those listed powers within the Constitution. They don't apply, or they cannot become portals so that the federal government can use them. Well, general welfare means that we can do almost anything the way I would think of it. So we should be able to make sure that everybody has ice cream every night. Or when FDR said, a chicken in every pot. You're going to find, and the epiphany will come to you, that they have wandered so far outside the boundaries of the Constitution that you'd think that it's impossible, that there's just no way we're going to get them back in. And I will tell you throughout this show, we are going to get into this. I do have this out on Facebook, and I actually have this out on the reclaimingtherepublic.org site. It is my executive summary on the irrefutable argument of why we need to convene a convention for Republic Review. I beseech you, I beg you to please read this. I know this may take 30 minutes, it may take an hour. It's worth it. Your time, the opportunity cost cannot be afforded to do otherwise. I hope that you come back next week, and I hope you have a great week. This is Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley, and I'm out of here. Have a great weekend.